I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
And welcome to the second Clash of the Titles Fanuary of the Year, the podcast that this January pits two movies with something in common picked by fans of the show and puts them in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. This week, in the red corner, we're saying damn the man and celebrating frickin' Rex Manning Day as we go music shopping 1995's Empire Records. While in the blue corner, more music store mayhem as Nick Hornby's novel moves to Chicago and we find out if 2000's High Fidelity makes our top five.
Hey, what are you doing?
I wanted to have a little chat with Warren.
Yeah? Have a little chat with my gun.
What do you want, Warren?
Stop calling me Warren! My name isn't fucking Warren!
His name isn't fucking Warren.
His name isn't fucking Warren.
His name isn't fucking Warren?
I thought his name was Warren.
And I talk to God, and she says, yo, what's up? And she wants you to lose the gun.
You're psycho. You are psycho. What the hell is wrong with you people?
Excuse me, I was
in a minute. Couldn't you be any more obvious than that, Rob? How about, the Beatles? How about fucking Beethoven? Track one, side one of the Fifth Symphony. How can someone who has no interest in music own a record store?
Hey, do you still have that beef fire French import safe as milk?
Yes, here it is.
How much you want for it?
Oh, no. You know what? I don't think I'm selling it this week. Maybe next week.
Oh, no, you said that last week.
Did I?
So it's a record store ruckus this week, but which film will be victorious? Let's find out. Welcome to Clash of the Titles Fanuary!
The Kraken.
Hello, Clash Butters. My wife left me for another woman and my girlfriend forced me to leave at gunpoint. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Telly.
And welcome to our second Fanuary special. As I said, we've had literally hundreds of suggestions, but the lines are still open, callers. So if you do have a clash that you'd like us to do this Fanuary, or possibly February Fanny, you can still email them in to show@clashpod.com with what? What do they have to do?
A reason would be great.
Mm, yeah, yeah. You're up for still having more.
Yeah, definitely. I would say Fanuary is closed. But February Fanny is wide open. So, yeah, we got this month planned out. But February Fanny, we need a Valentine one as well. So think of some weird romance.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What
alternative, we call it, yeah. Yeah. Something dark.
Yeah, that's what we
Something
want.
Messed up.
We want to really destroy Valentine's Day.
Because we hate it.
Yeah. So the clue we gave on last week's show, I was trying to remember. It feels like so long ago. I think mine was...
I had a listen.
It's music. It's the food of love.
And yeah.
We agreed that food shouldn't be in there. Then someone else had another one.
Shop till you drop.
Right, shop till you drop. Anyway, The guessers were found wandering the aisles of our Twitter at ClashPod if you want to give us a follow. We're also on Instagram and TikTok at ClashPod as well. And if you're in the business for a little extra class, check out our YouTube channel with some classic moments from the last few years of clashing. So, who won this week with the first correct guess? Congrats to longtime listener and live show stalwart, Gemma Page!
Yay!
Nailed it, nailed it.
She was the first correct guest this week. Well done, Gemma. She says, at our next live show, she plans to show us her impression of the Predator, which
right.
she describes as uncanny, and which her husband, Reese, describes as terrifying.
Okay.
So there's that to look forward to. Okay, connection section.
Do you want to know who suggested this pair?
Yes.
That would be nice, actually. Before we do the connection section, that would yeah. be the right order to do things in.
Why not? Mm. Four people have made this
Great.
Suggestion.
Wow.
Dean Tipton and Gavin Thomas. I don't believe they had reasons. but
gloss over those.
David Nowell Cook said, I'd bloody love Empire Records. I'm the only one of my friends who knows about it / loves it. And High Fidelity for a vinyl selling clash.
You're going to love this episode.
And then someone else suggested Empire Records versus High Fidelity, Record Store Romances and fucking great soundtracks. Much love from episode 128 winner, Rich Cracknell.
Yay!
Oh, okay then. So shall we do the connection section now?
Yeah.
Young punk kids shoplifting yep. before being welcomed to the record store family.
Yeah, I thought that was very specific.
Very specific.
Wasn't it?
And also those thieves having their music selection judged by the store owners.
Mm. Breaking the fourth wall mm-hmm. happens a lot in both films.
Mm. I've got a really good one. Are you ready?
But yeah, now I am.
So... when High Fidelity was first optioned, Scott Rosenberg wrote a version, but that version was later ditched. Then we get into some credit arbitration stuff, which we'll go into later. Anyway, Scott Rosenberg's version has a Tower Records-type store moving across the street and the record shop that's got Rob Gordon in it is trying to compete with this new big record store.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds quite good.
Yeah, it sounds like Empire Records a little bit, but
good.
Thanks.
Good connection. You were right to preempt that.
Yeah, by saying it was good.
Mm, yeah. yeah. Famous music stars within the confines of the movie visiting said record store. Rex Manning.
I guess so, yeah, yeah.
Oh, right, sorry. Yeah. I thought you meant real people.
What's the chops?
Right.
No. No, within that's why I said within the confines of the movie. Sorry. They are famous music stars, stars of the music world. Staff who probably shouldn't work in a record store. Staff who want to be singers in bands.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's all I've got.
Yep. Any more?
No.
Great then. On Thursday, we'll be getting High Fidelity, which means today it's frickin' Rex Manning Day on Clash of the Titles as we're becoming part of the Empire. Let me take you on a journey. A bunch of achingly beautiful people who look like the four non-blonde stylists just threw up on them work in a record store. Except they don't actually work. They have pretend funerals, do oil paintings out the back, and generally do what corporate Hollywood studios believe constitutes mid-90s alternative culture. That's right. For a film obsessed with sticking it to the man, this has the man's fingerprints all over it. But we're not here to just tear down this wonderful institute of counterculture. We're not the music town to Empire Records' delightful melting pot of teen angst. So let's look at the positives. Rex Manning is brilliant. That's right. The on-screen representation of the man is the best thing in an anti-the man movie. Go figure. Clashputters, for your consideration. Empire Records. So, individual histories with this movie. When did you see it? Where did you see it? What did you think? Victoria?
So I think I saw it around the time it came out. I didn't go to the cinema to see it. And I know... that I was young because it was in 95. Mm-hmm. I left school in 97, and around 96, 97 is when I started being in a band and hanging out in this very specific indie bar, which I loved. And all I remember from the film is Liv Tyler's blue jumper. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I have got to get me one of those. So I just spent ages searching for a baby blue Angora cardigan, which I eventually found with these bejeweled buttons, and it was gorgeous. And I wore it, and that's all I remember about Empire Records.
Did you pair it with a short tartan miniskirt?
No. That was never that. I've never had the build for that ever. Right. And not now, not then. And never in between.
I've never seen so many bare midriffs.
No.
It's bare midriff the movie.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I could do that. I wouldn't do that, but I could do that. But it's the
already
skirts.
A better film.
It's just those skirts. I mean, no, I just couldn't. I'm very pear-shaped, actually, guys. I'll just throw that out there. I suit an A-line skirt,
okay.
But nothing like that, no.
Okay.
pear shaped.
I'm pear shaped.
Is that what you? I've never looked at you and gone, oh, pear.
Good. It's just, I think it's a term that, like just 17 and girls' magazines that I read growing up were like, what body type are you? Right, and I was like, well, I'm a pear. And then it stuck till for now. And then, like, you say these to me now makes me realise how ridiculous that is.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, when I was, well, how old was I here? When I was like 16, I was like, I'm a pear. I can't wear that.
Okay. So no memory of whether you liked the movie or didn't like the movie.
I mean, I remember just thinking, sure, yeah, okay, cool, whatever. Like, okay. It didn't upset
me. That's exactly your attitude to everything. You're in a girl band. You're in a riot girl band. Yeah, whatever, cool.
Maybe.
Yeah. Is it a movie? I don't know. Fuck you. Chris?
I saw this at uni, rented it on video, watched with my mates. I thought everyone in it was a bit annoying. Mm-hmm. And very personally, I found the soundtrack very annoying. But I was surprised to read that it was a flop because it felt to me like this was just in the ether,
yeah,
in the culture of the time.
Because it wasn't just, it was such a flop. Like, it barely made anything.
So I guess,
which is bananas,
I
really.
I guess our generation are the only people that watched it, and even then, only a handful of us.
There
did.
Was a girl at university. Do you remember? Oh, God. Me and you, Alex, when we were at university, there was a girl who was really into this film, and that's another thing I remember.
No.
And that's why when someone says it's got cult status, normally I'm like, fucking cult status. But it's kind of rings true because you'd go to university, you meet these people you've never met, and you're all now sort of 18, 19. They're like, yeah, Empire Records is the thing. Mm.
I watched it when I was just too old. And I genuinely think your love for this movie comes down to exactly how old you were when
of
you
course,
saw it.
Yeah.
And I was a few years too old. I think I was about 16 and I was properly into that Gen X alternative grunge culture. I had the Nirvana t-shirt, I had my hair dyed. And this genuinely felt like Hollywood trying to commodify my, like, culture, my counterculture.
Yeah.
And I'd seen Clerks just before this and that felt authentic. And this just felt like they'd gone, Clerks did well.
Yes.
Let's do that with $1 billion and, you know, sell it to kids.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, yeah, I didn't love it at all. I felt manipulated by it. And, you know, my teen years are a long time behind me. You know, I'm not full of the angst. So I was excited to watch it again through fresh eyes and try and understand this cult status, beloved cult status that this movie has. So I'll tell you a bit about it then. Caroline Heikkinen. She worked at Tower Records in Phoenix and then in West Hollywood. She based a lot of her script for this movie on her experiences working at Tower Records. It was initially called Empire. She said in a 2014 interview that she tried to write a story. You may have seen this film. I haven't seen this film. But she said she was trying to write a story like the Richard Pryor classic Car Wash, which takes place over one day at a car wash only at a record store. Seen it?
Yep.
Good?
Yep.
It is a classic.
Yeah, we should do it.
I can't believe I missed that. So she was offered $325,000 up front for her script, followed by $200,000 if the film was made, plus 1% of any soundtrack royalties and 5% of the merchandising sales.
And she took that, yes?
She took that.
Good.
She took that.
When the way you said it, I thought she... And she said no.
No.
She thought it was worth more than that.
No. My inflection was, and I don't want to go too early on this because I was going to save it to the end, but you've already mentioned it. She got paid more for the script than the movie made at the US box office.
Oh my God, yeah, of course.
It's mad.
That's mad.
Mad.
And I imagine the soundtrack sold a few copies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but on a base level, ignoring the percentages, she made more from selling a script than the movie made at the box office.
Oof.
So, the script arrives on Michael Nathanson's desk, president of Regency Pictures, and he hires director Alan Moyle to direct it. He just had some success with a movie that I remember a lot of girls, not saying that's a reason, but I didn't watch it, called Pump Up the Volume with Christian
it's
Slater.
Brilliant. I've been pitching us doing this.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I messaged you guys about 2 months ago and no one responded.
Oh, really? I'm so sorry. I have no memory of that.
It's so shit on WhatsApp.
It's
You're
really
so good.
Good. It's really good.
All right. Well, it was... Moyle's street credibility, Nathanson says, with teens was part of what convinced him to greenlight the project. And also, he wanted a great soundtrack, and Pump Up the Volume apparently has a great soundtrack. Another reason why Alan Moyle is our director. Interestingly, he also worked as an actor. He appeared in David Cronenberg's Rabid as Young Man in Lobby.
Okay.
sounds like an extra rather than actor. Fine.
Right, Nathanson, he thinks Empire is going to be a surefire low-cost hit. Now, I touched on this already, but the problem was that this movie was being made by boomers who had no understanding of where counterculture was at this point, and It was the fact that, and there's a brilliant BuzzFeed article that you should check out all about this. There was a cultural skirmish, is what the article calls it, going on between Gen Xers fighting against corporations looking to exploit the alternative grunge scene.
Right.
So when it began filming, Kurt Cobain had just committed suicide. Marc Jacobs had put grunge on the high fashion runway, and major record labels were throwing money at anything that might be the next Nirvana or Pearl Jam. And so everyone, like, who loved that scene just felt that Empire Records was attempting to reach a subculture notoriously resistant to being addressed directly, which is what the movie's trying to do. I mean, you know, Mark even breaks the fourth wall, which we'll get into when we go through the film. So the final story I have is that 2 days after greenlighting Empire Records, Nathanson receives a phone call from Amy Heckling's agent going, Amy Heckling wants you, Regency Pictures, to make her new movie, a little film called Clueless. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I can't. I'm making Empire Records. That's my hit. That's my teen hit. And so misses out on $56 million, which is exactly $56 million more than Empire Records made. So, as you said, it was a flop. I'm going to talk about that at the end. Shall we go through this movie?
Love to.
Okay. Let's meet Lucas, played by Rory Cochrane. Obviously brought in because he was so fucking cool in Dazed and Confused as Slater.
Yeah.
Which we will do. Again, I'll say that one. Dazed and Confused is coming at some point, isn't it?
I mean, if you've got a good clash for Dazed and Confused...
We've already got one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Don't email us at show@crossboard.com. We're already on that. So apparently, Cochrane wasn't sure if he wanted the part or even wanted to continue acting at this point. Moyle describes him as a real existential dude. According to one source, he asked for a price so high he knew they'd say no. They said yes, and so he decided to do the movie. We also get another nod to Dazed and Confused. There's the soundtrack sticker on the cash register later. Then we meet Gina, played by Renée Zellweger, who was the real-life girlfriend of Cochrane at the time. He encouraged her to audition, so she gets cast as Gina. And 2 minutes in, we get the revelation. Some plot, ladies and gentlemen. The Empire is going to become a Music Town franchise. Mm. Oh, 2 minutes in, we've got that engine under the story.
A bit.
Do you know when we'll revisit that? 2 minutes from the end.
That's the thing. And also, we haven't seen... The shop is literally closed.
Yeah.
So Lucas is like, oh, we can't become a franchise because this place is great. I haven't seen that though, have I? I could do... Like, it isn't enough. I think, you know, the man thinks it's enough to invoke a record store and we'll all go, oh, we know that those, they're awesome. But there are bad ones and good ones. And so you need to see it alive, buzzing, you know, whatever, in the daytime. And then Lucas finds the papers.
Yep.
Well, I mean, that entire prologue was shot against the director's will. That prologue wasn't in the original cut.
The whole Atlantic City thing. It was Lucas arriving on his motorbike outside the shop, and it's gradually revealed he's lost $9,000 in Atlantic City. Regency went, no. Exposition. People won't understand. The kids, these Gen Xers that we're trying to appeal to, they're stupid as well. So we're going to have this whole Atlantic City thing.
And it makes it a really weird, disjointed start to the film. Mm-hmm. I wrote down, this is weirdly slow, and before I'd read that, oh no, this was completely added on after the fact.
I agree with you. It's the pacing, but also it becomes hyper real because he's walking through a casino. I can buy that. I like rom-coms. This is no problem for me. Hmm. Oh, look, it's a 22. It's a where he predicts to a few moves.
Yeah, yeah.
Then he throws the dice and he gets it. You're like, oh, so you're a magical person. Mm. But that's okay. That's fine. It's a comedy. No problem. But then you can't do that and then do a hard right to like self-harm and suicide and popping pills. Like it's too tonally abrasive. Mm.
It reminds me of some of the 80s and 90s American sitcoms for kids, though, that would do that same thing.
Right.
Where there'd be a magical character and then there'd be someone addicted to pills and say, by the bell, singing, I'm so excited, I'm excited, I'm so excited. And you're like, well, this doesn't work. Totally, this is not working.
The woman who tells Lucas, you're sex, at the craps table is actually Regency President Michael Nathanson's real-life girlfriend at the time.
Cool. She's still his girlfriend.
I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe they're very happy together. That was judgmental.
They might be.
Take that back. They're probably very happy, but not with this movie. So Lucas promptly loses the money. We meet AJ and Mark, played by Johnny Whitworth and Ethan Embry. So Mark, Tobey Maguire was in the running for Mark, but Embry was cast in the role. But Tobey Maguire was apparently promised a part in this movie. So he gets cast as a character called Andre, who is not in the final film. There's conflicting stories about what happened. Allegedly, he requested his scenes to be cut because he was struggling with alcoholism at the time and checked into rehab shortly after. The other story is that all the cast, because unlike Clerks, which was shot for, what, tens of thousands of dollars, this had a $10 million budget. All the cast were put up in duplexes on the North Carolina beach. They all took mushrooms together. Weed was everywhere. Maguire showed up, felt aimless, may or not have consumed a psychotropic drug, and somehow ended up in the basement of Moyle's beach house eating a giant bowl of cereal. Moyle found him there, talked to him for several hours. Maguire asked to go back to Hollywood to figure his life out and write a screenplay, which Moyle agreed to buy. Maguire returned to Hollywood, and as far as Moyle knows, never wrote the script, but then he was in the ice storm and obviously Spider-Man. So no Tobey Maguire in this. As for Mark as a character, thoughts on Mark?
Oof, no. Mm. I know. I don't want to be, I don't know. He's obviously so meant to be lovable, silly little puppy dog, like daft, childlike. Oh, no. It's fine, apart from when he tries to kiss that girl when she's got her eyes closed. And it's like, oh, so that's, then you're out. No, thank you. I just find him, it's awful. It's not the actor's fault. It's just what he's got to say and do.
It's the breaking the fourth wall.
John Cusack does it and it's fine.
Yeah,
so,
but John Cusack doesn't look at the camera and go, "Shoplifter!"
Gross,
you're like, oh, what's that? I got, you know, when you get bad goosebumps, I was like, this is like rubbing polystyrene on a shag carpet. It's like, oh my God.
It's Ethan Embry who plays him, and I've told you I've had run-ins with him. An interesting character.
Yeah.
A big character. He said at the time he had very bad ADD, and so he just injected that into the character, these sort of mad flights of fancies, and the nonsense he says was, he said that was just me at the time.
Mm. Yeah.
And we find out it's frickin' Rex Manning Day. Frickin'. Ah, I mean, so the studio wanted PG-13. The original script was R-rated, which is why we don't get any smoking marijuana. We don't get any like drinking. We don't get anything like anything that, you know, kids that age would be doing. And
how
certainly
old are they? How
no
old are
swearing.
Because Corey is going to Harvard. So what does that make her? 17? 18?
Okay. Yeah.
That's, well, I just wasn't sure.
I guess they'd all be different ages, wouldn't they? If they work in a record store.
Yeah.
Ethan Embry was 16 when he played Mark. But I don't know what age Mark's meant to be.
Okay.
Probably four.
Four, five.
So we meet Corey, played by Liv Tyler. She was cast because...
she's gorgeous.
And she was instantly recognisable to, in Moyle's words, the MTV generation.
In fairness, I really like her. And I've always really liked her. But there is... I hate going, when someone's gorgeous, they do well. But she is just so beautiful.
But she was as famous to me as any actress at the time because of those two Aerosmith videos.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the crazy one that convinced them to cast her, where she stars with Weirdly Alicia Silverstone. Moyle says, after Tyler was cast and arrived on set, it was unclear if she could act or was just being herself.
Right.
Fair enough.
What way to undermine someone's profession. You don't actually know how to do this. It's just you.
So Corey is going to offer herself to Rex Manning to take her virginity.
Yeah.
Now, I remember girls who were part of that scene and they were pretty, like, not like that.
What do you mean?
No, they just weren't like...
Say more.
They didn't fancy aging rock stars offer themselves up. They were quite, you know, independent, sort of, you know, like self, like, you know, confident women.
Yes.
But I guess there is some self-loathing going on with her, maybe, or there's certainly a lot of fear. She's taking all these drugs.
I mean, speed makes you horny. I remember that. Because we find out she's on those diet pills.
But weren't you saving yourself for Rod Stewart? It's same thing, isn't it?
Rod Stewart!
I'm trying to think of, that's a good comparison for Rex Manning.
Yeah. It literally is the comparison. They wanted to go for Rod Stewart plus Tom Jones. Mm. That's the Rex Manning we get.
I think you've got to remember, this is a girl whose dad sends her flowers at work. So you've got to understand she's got a bit of a fucked up attitude to sex. Like, that's not normal.
Oh, also,
what a creep.
Maxwell Caulfield is a very good looking man.
Yep.
And if you've seen Grease 2, you're probably going to want it as well.
I was, at first, I was like, what did you say? But It's because she's with her girlfriend, and girls do, you know, I'm not sorry, that's ridiculous. My experience of female friendships is even if your friend wants to do something that's fucking bananas and stupid, to be supportive, you'll be like, yay, go you! Which is really, rather than going, what? Why would you want to do that? That's disgusting. We're just like, yeah, if you want it, no problem. I will help you get that thing. So she said it gets really sour and horrible later. Mm. But in this scene with Gina in the car, I was like, that is the sort of stupid shit that people say and do.
Well, that's why she's wearing the red bra with the white knickers, because that was a scene that was cut where Gina actually gives her the red bra.
A better bra.
So this is all happening on the same day. AJ is going to tell Corey he loves her. We meet Joe, Anthony Paglia, who is trying to get hold of Lucas and the money. He's ringing his phone and he says, come on, Buckethead. Fine if you don't want to have swearing in your movie, but you can't then replace that with words that no adult would ever fucking say.
Bucket, I didn't even notice.
No, I didn't notice that. I didn't notice
Come
that.
On, Buckethead. It's like preschool. Ooh, Mr. Buckethead's coming. It's just the stupidest thing. Anyway.
Wasn't Buckethead in Slash's band? He had a band. He had a KFC box on his head, and he was Buckethead, I'm sure.
100%, yes. What was that band called?
What, the one after Guns N' Roses?
Yeah.
Revolver. Velvet Revolver.
Or
no.
Slash's Snake Pit. I don't know.
Have you just made that up?
No, he had a band called Slash Snake Pit, I think. Yeah.
Buckethead was in a guitar band.
Anyway.
Awful.
Yeah.
Made me think of him. Sorry.
We get a moment that Häkkinen says happened in a lot of Tower record stores where employees fought over who was going to put a CD on. By the way, did either of you ever work in a record store?
Let's have a think then. No.
I didn't.
I mean, Blackburn, there was like Andy's Records, which was an independent record store. Mm. And that got taken over by Virgin eventually. It wasn't like this sort of hub where all your misfits could drop in. He was trying to sell records, so...
But you did go to... I mean, I remember when we used to meet in town in Leeds, we used to meet on Brigger on outside the Virgin Megastore. That was like where we'd go, because the first place you'd want to go...
Because you can steal from there quite easily.
You could back in the day.
Yeah. Better question is, have you ever stolen from a record shop? Yes.
Have you?
Yeah, of course.
Jesus.
It's like a rite of passage, isn't it?
No.
Yeah, it is.
For who?
Thieves. People at my school.
I don't believe we have a statute of limitations in the UK, so this is bad. Can you give me a day at a time?
Whatever shit would have been nearest the door, because I'm too afraid to like go in and get what I want. Who knows what it was?
Wow, you were the scary kid in the year then.
No,
because
I wasn't
once,
me.
Well, it sounds like it, because the only person who ever, me and my like tabletop wargaming friends met outside Virgin Megastore, and the cool, scary kid in the year, not cool, the scary one, the cool kids were one
you
thing.
You can say it, it's all right.
He comes
I'm
up
cool.
And he goes, do you want anything from inside the store? And we're like, nope. What? And he's like, I'll just go in and steal it for you. And I was like, No.
When I was a kid, I would go to my local video store was also the local record store, and it was tiny. It was like one aisle was videos and one aisle was records. So I went there all through my childhood, got to know the guy that ran it. I used to do drawings when I was little and he put them up on the walls there.
Oh, that's nice.
And then, when I was a teenager, every Saturday I'd be at HMV and Virgin in Croydon listening to the listening posts.
Yeah.
Which I forgot existed. Like, this was a real lovely nostalgia hit watching this now, the Game Boys and the listening posts. And it was just, you forget what an effort it was to hear new music.
Yes.
And find new music. And I kind of miss that a little bit. I mean, obviously, it's great having everything at your fingertips, but there was something fun about the chase.
Definitely.
And the research. And
there was an indie, much more indie place in Blackburn across from the library. And you had to go and order the records off the label that you wanted. And I'd take in the enemy and I'd be like, I want this, 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 and this. And he'd be like, well, in 6 weeks' time, you can have it. And I'd be like, that's brilliant. Like, see you in 6 weeks. Can't wait.
Fine. So. We get probably one of the greatest things in this movie, the video for Rex Manning's
Oh, it's awesome.
Say
so
No
good.
More, Mona
it's
More.
It's just such a shot of like actual comedy as well. You're like, whose idea was this? Mm. Brilliant.
Perfect. The whole video is on YouTube and I did watch it all.
It's really good.
They were only going to shoot 17 seconds of it and then they started shooting it and they were like, this is fucking
it's
hilarious.
Actually good. Yeah.
It really works. And it's not even the worst song as well.
No, it's all right.
It's quite catchy.
That might be our age. I don't know.
There is a good line here. Finally, you know, I like a good line, which is where Joe says to Lucas, what makes you think that? And Lucas says, who knows where thoughts come from?
I like that.
They just appear. Mm. Good line. Good writing. So we meet Deb. Deb was originally maybe going to be played by Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, she basically played that character, didn't she, soon
in
after?
Hackers, yeah.
And Girl Interrupted, I was thinking.
Sure, yeah, that as well. Alan Ritchie, one of the producers, says, she came in like a force of nature with an insane, powerful energy that blew everyone away. They tried to fit her into any of the three lead female roles, but she was just too much.
Right. Too much. You're too much.
You are just too much. He says she would have eaten those roles alive. Eat them alive. Sounds great.
It does.
Put her in it. But we get Robin Tunney as Deb, who, as you mentioned, suicidal.
Yeah.
Pretty fucking dark.
Yeah, it's a bit of a swerve.
Mm. She shaved her head for real for the role on camera. It was her idea that her character should shave the head, her real hair.
I was obsessed with it. I was like, you're either super committed, which you may be, or the director is excellent, or the director's a dick and has gone, shave your head, and you've just done it.
No, I was happy to read that it was all her idea, which is obviously why we get The Craft and she's clearly wearing a wig for that movie.
But is it one of those films, why the cult has built up around this? I don't feel like this is as a man watching the male characters, but is this the kind of film where girls say, oh, I feel seen, like I was one of these characters, I am one of these characters?
I knew people like that.
They're very broadly drawn characters, yeah. But I can see girls seeing themselves in these three different sort of archetypes.
What, perfect slut and mess?
Yes.
So no one is any one thing, but it's good to have those
some people
three those three things represented. Mm. I mean, you're always trying to balance all these different aspects of yourself. I definitely knew girls like Deb.
Mm.
But yep. I was, you know, when I was 15, 16, I wasn't the caring, wholesome person I am now. And I just would have found them fucking annoying.
What just happened?
I'm quite caring.
I feel like I blacked out and woke up in a dream.
Wholesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I was struggling there. I'm not wholesome.
Is it opposite stay?
Although, no, I'm being unfair because one girl I did know was a bit like Deb, but not with, with less self-harm. She's the person that introduced me to The Crow, which changed my life because it's the best films ever made.
Did it win that week? Did it win that week?
You did that on purpose, and I'm still... See how,
to hurt you.
Yeah, that is what I think.
People are just like one thing from this movie. People are just, I'm just AJ, you know, a tortured artist.
Really?
Yeah. I was trying to figure out which one Alex would say he is.
The one with the hair.
I thought I'm
torn between Lucas and AJ.
Yeah, Lucas and AJ.
I just can't decide. Which one are you, Chris?
You're more like Mark. I'm Joe.
Yeah, you are. You are Joe. Who are you?
I don't think I'm represented.
No one can be just one person.
That's true. Do you want to be just one person?
AJ, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I am a lot like
he's
him.
He's like a cardboard cutout of a person. Yeah, he's got nothing going on for him. He can't even really draw, if I'm being mean.
He doesn't have to explain his art, though. He glues coins to a floor.
That's so true.
Outside the box, Victoria. Think outside the box. That is art. So, we get that weird line where this is just such a strange moment. Someone says, Lucas is acting odd today, which throws his entire character off kilter because we've only ever seen him
like this. And we want him to be like this.
Yeah. We like him like this. Yeah. This sort of weird, sort of like, you know, philosophical magic person.
Yes.
And to say this is not the regular Lucas, it's like, well, we're never going to see him and we don't know what that is. No. So maybe we won't like normal Lucas. What is he, really efficient and businesslike?
Yeah, you make a really good point. That is stupid, isn't it?
Yep. We discover Mark wants to be the singer in a band called Mark with a C, a dream which will swap characters by the end of this movie.
Oh, my God! I had it as my change and they had to take it out because I can't believe they've done that.
What? I've missed this.
How drunk were you on New Year's Eve when we spoke?
I remember now. Okay. All right.
What so did
then
I say?
Because then they give it to Gina instead. All right, fine. Jesus Christ. You stop shaming me. It's making me annoying.
I'm just because I'm normally the one who can't remember stuff when we have a drunk conversation.
Fine. By the way, they didn't. The audience didn't hear what happened before we started the podcast.
Sorry. Yeah, Vicky started to tell me. She started to tell me a story that she told me on New Year's Eve, and then when I went, "You've told me this story," she's like, "No, it definitely happened on New Year's Day."
It did.
But she didn't because you told me it on New Year's Eve.
I'm not saying anything. I'm just running it, and yeah, I think you might be right. So fine.
All right, good.
But it's so it's Mark that's at this point wants to be singer in a band. Yeah, and I'm right for my change immediately. Well, he's not in the band at the end, so he should be on stage with the band at the end. Yep. That should be fulfilling his dream.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then someone, oh no, they've switched. They've done a switcheroo.
For no apparent reason, Gina just goes, by the way,
I want to be a singer.
I want to be the singer in a band.
Great, set up payoff.
Like, who looks sexier at the end on stage? Yeah. Renée Zellweger or Ethan Embry? Yeah. Get her up there. Yeah.
And if you've watched the deleted scenes, I will be getting to it. Oh. There's another person who gets to have their moment on stage at the end in the deleted scene.
Oh, yeah, really?
We'll get there.
It's great. It's
brilliant.
I'll explain it, but Chris, you tell it when it happens.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
We get the shoplifter scene. Mark, as I said, screams "shoplifter" at the camera. Cringe. Warren is the shoplifter, played by Brendan Sexton. They catch him. There's a chase scene. Apparently his stunt double broke his rib when the car door was opened.
Sorry, that's not funny. Just because he's so tame. Like, he doesn't get beaten or anything. And it's like, wonk, car door. And it's like, someone did actually get hurt. That's really awful.
And they do a mini photo shoot with Warren and Rex Manning, which is just odd.
And at this point, can I just say, like, we've had Romeo and Juliet by Dire Straits. You've had... Money, that cover of the Beatles. You've got Video Killed the Radio Star. Now, there were lots of cool music around at this time. Why did this film not put any of the cool music? Yeah. These are songs from 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah, they are.
And it's like, it's just got stuck in such a rut of middle of the road American soft rock.
Yeah.
Like, I like the Gin Blossoms. I'm embarrassed to say that. But everything and everything else is just like the Gin Blossoms. Like, oh my God, this is so painfully bland. And it's a film about, you know, High Fidelity does it so much better in terms of there's fucking cool music in High Fidelity. Mm. And this just, I just can't believe they didn't get the soundtrack right.
And on that bombshell that Chris is a huge Gin Blossoms fan, we'll take a break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, we're back. We meet Burko, who I'd completely forgotten was in this because he didn't make the poster.
Mm. Who's that?
Burko. Well,
oh, the...
No, that's the perfect question, because clearly his entire backstory was cut because there's no explanation to his relationship with Deb.
Oh, him. Okay.
What's going on, who he is, why he is. But Burko turns up. Interestingly, he's played by musician Coyote Shivers, musician actor Coyote Shivers, who was married to Baby Buell, who was Liv Tyler's mum, which makes him, on the set of this movie, Liv Tyler's stepdad.
What a family setup.
Weird. Yeah.
Okay.
And she had to have a guardian, so he became her guardian.
That's not right.
Dad?
Person my mum is married to?
Here's some flowers.
And that ballerina girl that Mark approaches, that's Maxwell Caulfield's daughter.
Mm. Is it?
Yeah. Oh,
that's a good fact. A
very incestuous film.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, she just turned up to set with her dad and they were like, do you want to be a ballerina and have your foot kissed? Vomit. No shoes on. Walking around a dirty film set. He's going to kiss your foot. It's absolutely disgusting. Disgusting. So, as I said, Burko didn't make the poster, but Burko's in it. There's no explanation again to why Joe is apparently so concerned that Jane, Rex Manning's assistant, is quitting.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Their relationship backstory made the cutting room floor, not the movie. We meet the owner of the store, Mitch, who would rather it was still a bathroom emporium. There's a weird moment where Mark, oh, we just did this, secretly tries to kiss a customer. I do like the scene where Corey wants to take Rex his lunch. Good rule of three. Because Joe is going, Burko's doing it.
Oh, that's
it,
yeah.
I want to take Rex his lunch. Yeah. Burko's doing it. And then she screeches it at the end.
Yeah, but the lunch scene is not good.
So, let's do the lunch scene. She's sexy dancing.
She's very sexualized for a nice girl virgin. Mm. I mean, I'm not saying those people don't exist, but it feels like a man has gone. Can you do a sexy dance? She's like, I'm Liv Tyler. Of course I can.
That's what I do.
Must remember, I'm also a nice girl virgin. So it's
written by a woman.
Yeah, no, I know. People aren't just one thing, Chris.
True. This is where Max Caulfield is great, though, as Rex Manning. When he sits down, he's more concerned with his lunch than this girl offering herself to him. Tucks his napkin into his collar, and then he's great. I mean, it's so creepy where he just unzips his fly and goes, rock and roll.
He turns into Wim Butler.
Does she? Why did you do that?
I'm sorry, Vic. I'm as upset as you are.
Yeah, but I was getting, which is bad. I was close to just getting. I thought I got over it. I thought I was over the line a bit with it. I don't know why.
You've not come back round yet.
No.
Oh, because you seem to believe that it would all fade away, and you
for me personally,
yeah, not literally.
No, just that's going to go away, world. No, I'm still not there. I'm still not
me neither.
There. So anyway, she is a very confident seeming young lady in this scene. She almost fully strips. She's getting what she wants.
Right.
Then she's offered what she wants and she doesn't want it anymore. I understand that. You can change your mind.
So why does she not want it anymore? Because
that's what I'm asking.
I think it's the way he says it, doesn't he? He says something really awful.
I
can't remember the line.
Is it because he says, asking for oral because he's sat down? That's all I can think. And that's not what she had in her head.
I think it's that she's just had this realisation. This is what I think it is. I think she had a realisation that actually she doesn't want to do this and she's not actually... She realises her own naivety towards sex in that moment, which kind of goes some way to explain the conversation she has with Gina afterwards, where she's like basically calls Gina a slut.
Mm.
But that's coming from her own jealousy at Gina being sexually competent, whereas she's just had an experience where she suddenly realised she was out of her depth.
Also, Rex Manning is presented as sort of a romantic, you know.
Fop.
And so I think she's expecting a bit of romance here. And when he just wants a quickie, this is not this romantic thing she'd built up in her head. When is it?
It's just tricky, is it? Because her sexy dance, there's a way of writing it where it's like you're doing all the moves, but you're like, it's like a facsimile of a sexy dance because you're not actually fully inhabiting it because you've never done that before.
Mm.
But she's so good at it.
She did the crazy video.
She's very good at that. So then when she's like, no, thank you, like, no problem. Mm-hmm. You didn't see, you just, it's such a fucking sharp turn again. And then I understand, yes, a woman wrote it. I don't like this one bit when it's like, now we're just going to turn the women on each other. What the fuck is that?
Good. I'm glad you said that because I wrote down, do women really do this? Like when you've had sort of an exposing like moment and your friend is there, turn on them?
No.
No, I didn't think so.
It's not necessarily all cuddles and all, let's have a pillow fight, but it's just to push.
Should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
it's
what this movie's missing.
It's just to push the low point. And I don't mind it. I don't mind it when a script is really like, here are the building blocks of the script, and here is his building to a low point. But two people just having a row.
Well, I wrote down, like that. I wrote down Corey loses her mind, because that's what it feels like. I guess this is there something to do with the fact that she's also been taking all these pills, like she's just having a bit of a moment.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
No, I agree. It just doesn't work.
You then establish the pills first, though, so people go, "Oh, it's
that's
pills."
What it is.
Yeah, as opposed to later where
they'd already done it. They'd already done it earlier.
But I didn't know what the pills were. When she takes them, I thought, maybe I'm quite naive, but I didn't think, oh, that's speed. I thought it could be anything.
Yeah. Because we didn't have diet pills here, really.
Not really.
Speed came as a powder.
I knew. Yeah.
That's what you could buy in when you went to Thailand to the full moon parties.
All right.
You could buy diet pills over there.
Diet pills. Yeah. Quote mark. Yeah.
I took three and fell asleep on the beach.
You fell asleep on speed? Are you sure?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, they probably saw me coming. Hello. I'd like some of these diet pills, please. Corey goes to apologise to AJ, who is doing an oil painting out back of the store because no one does any work. he doesn't want to be friends and makes her jealous by dancing with Deb. Rex and Gina are discovered having sex. Sorry, yeah, I skipped that bit. Gina sleeps with Rex Manning to get back at Corey for calling her a slut. Then, once they're discovered, they all tell Rex he's a loser. They don't like his albums or his hair, which feels like a bit of a damp squib ending for Rex because he leaves. But this leads into what Chris was going to say, which is straight after this, there's a scene where he leaves and we get, and it's a great scene. It was on the Empire Records Remix Fan Special Edition DVD, which is where Burke...
Turns out I've got... I didn't know.
Oh,
I was about to buy this and there I found it on my shelf.
Video from Jim Blossoms on there, isn't there? No wonder you have. So Burko and Rex have a conversation out back and Rex suddenly becomes this really sympathetic character. Like, he realises that he's a joke. He knows he's a joke. Him and Burko, who obviously is a musician in the movie, have a conversation where Rex says they didn't even let me play guitar on my last three albums, and he's like to Burko, don't let that happen to you.
Yeah, he's filled with regret, and Burko says that's not going to happen to me, and Rex goes, you keep that thought.
And then he sort of walks off into the distance hasn't turned up for him. He's like, of course my car hasn't turned up either.
It just suddenly gives him all these dimensions of he was one of these kids once, and his dreams has been sort of stomped out by the industry.
And
it sets up the moment Chris is going to tell you about at the very end. But in the meantime, we have Corey is screwed up, so her and Deb become friends. Jane comes back and asks Joe if he wants to have dinner with her, which really wasn't set up. But clearly, I think if we're joining the dots, they had some kind of relationship in the past and she went off to work for Rex.
They're just the only two adults in the film. So the law is they have to get together. That's the way it goes.
Mark eats some weed brownies and ends up in a Guar video where he gets devoured. This wasn't in the original script. Basically, Guar were playing a show in Wilmington where the film was shot and they were like, ooh, let's get him on stage with them.
Okay.
That's that moment. and then we get the funeral for Deb, which comes way out of left field. Suddenly happened. Everyone reveals their fears.
Which isn't the point of the funeral. I just want to say, if I was Deb, I'd be like, she does say we're not supposed to be talking about me.
She does call them out on it.
Yeah, but be a good friend and be like, God, I'm so sorry. You're absolutely right. You're obviously really struggling. I'll tell you this another time. Mm-hmm. Not a big deal.
Yeah, AJ wants to go to art school. But he's afraid. Corey wishes she could be like Gina, who is so brave and who is conveniently lurking in the shadows to hear this. Gina wants to sing in a band, but doesn't even have the guts to audition, thus transferring Mark's earlier dream of singing in a band to Gina, which is mad. Lucas, I think, was adopted by Joe.
Yeah.
A children's home?
I think he was. Watching it this time, I was paying a bit more attention to Joe because I'm his age, I guess. and it's really interesting.
His tolerance is amazing.
But it's interesting, his character. He's the only one that takes the time to listen to Deb. He's adopted Lucas. He's obviously going to give Warren a job. And it's like, wow, this guy is adorable.
Yeah.
What a good dude.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, thank God Warren comes back and starts shooting the place up. he does say what we're all thinking, though. He goes, you all think you're so great because you work in a record store. I am so with Warren at this point.
This was my issue, even watching it at the time, that everyone is just so affected. Everyone is acting in such a cool way that just people don't act like in real life. Mm. And they're always sort of posing and fidgeting and... It just drove me up the wall then, and it drove me up the wall this time as well. They're just annoying.
Well, thankfully, Warren used blanks, so he gets a job in the store.
Because... yeah, well, Joe doesn't care. Yeah. He knows he's a kid with a good heart.
Sure. And a gun. This is a crazy moment where Lucas says to Warren, don't let the man get you down, as he's been carted off by the man in the form of two police officers that the store actually called when they needed the man's help. It's just such a confused moment. It's like, we need the man, but don't take any shit from him. Not you, officers. Thank you for your hard work.
Yeah, his anti-establishment attitude hasn't been worked through, I think. I think they just, if you just keep saying the man enough and you wear a polo neck, everyone will think that's cool.
I got a polo neck just like that for Christmas.
Did you? Yeah, oh, that's nice.
A ribbed polo neck.
Well, that will keep you toasty warm.
That's great. I bought a leather jacket as well to go with it. So
okay.
I'm gravitating from AJ to Lucas.
That was my look at the time, was that. And I had the similar hair as well. That sort of George Clooney, Julius Caesar cut.
Yeah,
I didn't realise I was dressing like Lucas when I was 18. What a knob. But you'll look cool.
Thanks. Let's get back to the plot that we started at minute two. It's time to save Empire Records so it doesn't become a music town. They decide to have a gig. $5 seems a lot for a beer.
Yeah.
1995?
Yeah. I didn't... Definitely. Not to do... Well, fuck it, I don't care. So first of all, is it a fundraiser to buy the store, or is it a fundraiser to get the takings back that Lucas lost? Is it both? If you're selling stock, existing stock, you're not making extra money because you're selling existing stock. Mm. Who laid out the capital for the beer?
This is one of Vicky's sexy arguments. And inflation. Don't forget inflation at 3%.
I'm just saying,
who
you
laid
don't
out
have
the
any
capital for the beer. Well, they put all their money together in one scene, so I guess that was
it wasn't
enough for the $9,000.
I do know where you're coming from, because there's a minute where Joe gives Mitch, the owner of Empire, he gives him the money.
Yeah.
And Mitch goes, I want, Joe goes, I want to buy the store from you. And you don't even like music. And Mitch goes, yeah, I'll sell it to you. Looks at the $9,000
and says,
I'll sell it to you for cheap.
Yeah.
And are we suggesting that he's going to sell his business for £9,000?
But actually selling it for nothing, because that's the $9,000 he lost last night. So it's actually free.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Yeah. Although he does say the funny line, doesn't anyone work in this store? Joe gives him the $9,000. He gets the store, presumably. And then after all my negativity about this movie, it does leave me on a high.
It's because all the subcultures come together and it's stupidly cheap and whatever, but it is cute.
It's specifically a sugar high.
Oh, God.
I love this song.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I really love this gig, and I love Gina finding a voice and a confidence and doing her silly
so
dance.
So annoying, though, like Chris says she does, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Like, no. She's got a beautiful voice, but fucking hell, stop that.
Yeah, it's all right. But the shaking of the hand, I would just gently nudge her off that roof at that point.
But who else? Who else was meant to be on stage, Chris?
So, following that slight setup between Rex and Burko, they're on the stage, and in this deleted scene, Burko starts playing Say No More, Mon Amour.
Yay!
And we look into the audience, and Burko waves at Rex from the stage. Rex is standing there watching them, and he sort of smiles back, and then he's invited to join them on stage. He comes up, he grabs a guitar, and he starts absolutely shredding, and it's awesome. And he's rocking the place up until the police come, shut them down and arrest him, and he's taken away by the police sort of being held back, and it's totally rock and roll moment. And you feel like, oh, well, that could be setting up Rex's return.
Yeah.
Rock and roll's bad boy suddenly.
Great.
And so it's, and then it cuts away, and standing sort of on a post box across the road, watching this all unfold, is Lucas sort of smiling and nodding, like our magical man had planned even that he knew would happen.
That's lovely.
And it's great. I mean, it's not the anti-establishment ending again. Like, it's a much more satisfying ending, I thought. Yep. But then it's not what this film should be either. It's very sentimental.
But the point is, you've heard this before, the establishment cannot make an anti-establishment movie. Clerks is Clerks because kids made it and then kids found it. And then when the man is like, I can do that, by dint of you being the man, you can't. It's already over. No. Like, that's just a fact.
Agreed. Yeah.
We then get a moment where AJ tells Corey that he's going to art school in Boston because she's going to Harvard in Boston, which is not at all stalkery.
No.
And she manages to go, don't do that. This was very much, yeah, a little fling.
One and done.
Yeah, we're yeah. out. I'm going to meet real people.
Yeah, I'm going to Harvard. I don't know if you know what that is.
You were told earlier.
Yeah, you're into like bad art and stuff.
And that's it. We're done. Save for a brilliant mid-credit scene where Mark and his stoner friend Eddie are discussing music on the curb. Like, and it's just great. And I'll talk more about it. Oh, you didn't see it?
No, I had to turn it off after.
He's saying why the Pixies are better than Primus. Mm. Obviously, it's making me think, why aren't the Pixies in this film?
Yep.
There are a couple of good songs. There's a good Lemonhead song. There's a good, the Edwin Collins, Girl Like You,
yes.
I think works really well here. But then they have Gin Blossoms very quickly now. And then the credits, it's This Is The Day by The from 1983, from 12 years ago. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just thinking, it's a good song. Mm. Yep. But like, is this just the director's favourite song?
It is, but that's what it is. Alan Moyle, basically, the studio were like, just, you know, okay. Cool music from this era, right? And he's like, no. I really want it to be a tableau of music from all
right.
generations.
Okay.
So this was very much his intention.
And that's fine, but the modern day song should have been better than this. They should have had the Pixies. But it's interesting because there is a quote from him saying he wanted the soul of the movie to be about music with wandering diatribes about specific artists to anchor scenes. And that's what that scene is that comes in the middle of the credits. And I guess that's what kind of Slacker was. That would be the Slacker version of this. But he said the studio was in a cocaine mentality while we, the movie, were in a pot mentality. And so he wanted to make a stoner movie, which would have worked much better, I think.
Yeah.
Yep, agreed. Alan Moyle did a director's cut. Regency then recut it, and this is where the problems begin. So, in August 1994, the plan was to release Empire Records in 1,250 theatres. They decided to screen it beforehand. So Regency did the first screening in a white middle-class area of the San Fernando Valley. The audience loved it. Moyle was pleased, but Regency wanted to test it again. They tested it in a lower-class Hispanic neighbourhood, and the results were disastrous. The cast, the characters' concerns, and the music were all exposed to be very white. Very white.
Why did no one notice before?
So Regency and Warner Brothers basically see the audience scores from the second test screening and get the fear. Even though Clueless had been a success, they just suddenly decided to downsize the wide release of this movie and literally dumped the film. So instead of over 1,000 screens, it opened on 87.
Wow. Mm.
I don't understand why they did that.
I mean,
this would have been a hit, I think, if they properly released it.
Yeah. I do too.
It might not have been a Clueless hit. It's not going to be a... it might have been. It might have been.
No premiere, no national advertising campaign. No one basically knew about this movie. And like I told you at the start, it made, considering Heikkinen got $525,000 as a minimum for her script, the film made just over $300,000.
Like by accident. Mm. I mean, I don't know how a film makes it. To my mind, it makes it nothing or it makes bazillions. But that amount of money is like, did people go by accident and they went into the wrong screen or they asked for the wrong ticket?
Yes, it was an unmitigated bomb. Warner Brothers yanked it from the screens early because they were the distributor because no one was going to see it. But this is where it becomes this cult because kids saw the poster, people had it on their fucking student walls. It was on, like, people rented it.
Liv Tyler becomes really famous, doesn't she? Not many. Does anyone else become famous from this? Oh, Renée Zellweger, obviously.
Robin Tunney was big at the time.
Rory Cochrane had a good, solid career, if not a massive movie star.
Mm.
So did Johnny Whitworth. Anthony LaPaglia was in a few things.
Sure.
I just said they must become a star. That's what I meant. You've got two.
Yeah, all right. So does this fit into your continuing argument that basically if you make a shit film 20 years later, people will call it a cult classic?
It's tricky, isn't it? Because I saw this around the time it came out. I think it was about 96. And then by the time I went to university, like 99, 2000, people loved it. So that's a quick turnaround for a cult film. Mm. So maybe it was always okay. And it just,
When I watched this in 1996, I was annoyed, but I was entertained.
Yeah.
When I watched this 2 weeks ago, I was annoyed, but I was entertained.
I had a wobble when it was on for about 10 minutes and because I'd made Mark watch it and that always puts me under a bit of pressure. I know.
You're mad.
I know. I wish I watched it by myself.
It's not the terrible decision.
And it makes me, we're on the sofa and I start to run cold and I get really twitchy.
Do you go red?
No, because I run cold.
Oh, okay.
Cold. I've gone still.
Well, that's a different reaction to what we've seen. Okay.
Yeah. And I don't get nervous, I just get fearful.
Right.
So I just drain of colour, if anything.
Horrible.
And then I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get through this. And then that just lifted and everything was fine. He was still mad as hell, obviously.
Yeah, of course,
but
I can't believe you showed him this.
I don't know what this I was
is
thinking.
Like, this is actually the movie that I imagine he would hate most out of every movie we've ever covered.
I shall ask him.
Yeah, do. So all the cast, they make this movie, as you say, some become stars, but they have no idea that this cult status has built up around the film. And then our friend Ethan Embry, I say ours, Chris's friend
Chris's
Ethan
mate,
Embry,
yeah.
Chris's mate, ask him if he wants to come on the show, like Fede Alvarez, we're still waiting. He finds out that they're doing these fan screenings, these outdoor fan screenings, and he convinces the cast to come along, director Alan Moyle, and they end up watching it with a sellout crowd of 4,000 diehard fans in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. People in costume, people yelling lines at the screen, a spontaneous group dance along, which happens over the film's final moments while they're playing Sugar High, and everyone is like, oh my God, people actually do love our movie. Moyle's words, it was the premiere Empire Records never had, and producer Alan Ritchie says it became a damned classic, and that's something to be damned proud of.
I think that is stretching things a bit.
Well, I didn't know it had become a cult classic. I thought it was a hit at the time, and it was only 2 years ago when a friend of mine organised a screening for Rex Manning Day. I didn't know Rex Manning Day had become this huge thing social media. Yeah. On April the 8th, people talk about Rex Manning Day, they share memes, they share the music video, and they put on screenings of this film. And I'll have something to tweet out every April 8th from now on, which is part of the reason.
Yeah. Do you think the people who like celebrate Rex Manning Day are going to want to listen to this episode? Be honest.
I hope you've enjoyed yourselves. Thank you for taking the time to spend this hour with us.
All right, then, shall we do the bits?
Sure.
Best scene, Chris.
At any time they play the Gin Blossoms. Because I was the only person in England that bought a Gin Blossoms record. I was the only person. I don't know.
The Smiths and the Gin Blossoms, and that was it.
Yeah, it's very similar. Dylan and the Gin Blossoms. I don't know. I fell for it a little bit when they do Sugar High at the end, even though her handshaking is annoying.
I told you. Why didn't you say that at the time when I was like, I bloody love Sugar High, and you were like, no, she's annoying.
I was making a joke about nudging her off the stage. So that.
Okay. Sugar High. It gets me. Like,
really?
I can watch this movie and pick holes in it. And yet by the end, when they're playing Sugar High, I literally finished watching the movie and then found it on YouTube where they've cut it all together without all the talky bits in between and started watching that on repeat. I think it's great. Sugar High. Talky bits. Bleh. Too much talking. Bleh, play Sugar High. Get Rex Manning on.
Mine is when Warren is given the job. Like, it's when you said Joe's looking at him, he's like, this kid's got heart kind of thing. And this Joe character, it's what you always say, Chris, about films, like Amblin films of the 80s and early 90s were, well, lots of films like that, where the grown-ups talk to the kids like they're grown-ups.
Yeah.
But he's a grown man hanging out with irritating, stunted teenagers, like they're really fucking annoying, and yet he finds them entertaining and entrancing and he can tolerate them, which is weird.
And we don't think he's a pedo.
No, I never thought he was a pedo. That moment where he's talking,
she will know, she's got a sense for it. Any movie from this era, she can spot a pedo.
But when he's looking at her, because Warren, the actor that plays Warren, is also very good, so when he's like, am I going to get a job, and you think, oh, he's going to turn his life around because of this magical record store, like that's a proper nice moment.
Very good.
Most valuable whatever. Can be anything in the film. What is it?
Anything in the film.
Anything.
Go on, Vicky.
You're right.
Yep. Go on. Doesn't have to be a person or an actor.
Whatever. Most valuable whatever.
Okay, cool. It's Renee Zellweger. Despite the handshaking, she's better at acting than everyone else.
That scene where she calls Corey out over the pills, I think she's fantastic.
Yeah, she's great.
Huh? And even the handshaking thing?
No, the handshaking thing's got to stop.
Right, fine.
But she's very underserved. She's the slut, that's it. And when she comes prancing out in that tiny apron.
Oh, sorry, that's my favourite scene.
But I don't know if it's just the girls I was hanging out with. I have never met anyone like
James.
That.
Yeah.
I've never met anyone like that in my life that at that age would be that confident. It's just my friends, that's fine, I'll say that. But we would never have done that.
Not a pear-shaped body.
No, I'd more likely to do it now because I've come into my power.
Right,
do you know what I mean? But
don't.
When, no, I won't.
Not now.
But when I was 16. No, no, no. Apart from that little blue cardigan, I was
Watch this video of Clash After Dark.
But yeah, she's just better, isn't she? She's just got more presence than anyone else.
Yeah. Okay, Chris.
Rex Manning.
Yeah. Me too.
It's obviously Rex Manning. Yeah.
It's either Rex Manning or Rex Manning specifically in Say No More,
sure.
More.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's definitely the most valuable, whatever. Okay, what would you change, Chris?
As the film messed up my change that I had planned, I think they should show some actual rebellious spirit at the end of the film and trash Empire Records and then burn it to the ground.
Burn it down.
Establish that the owner collects the insurance, so it's a victimless crime.
Sure.
But I think forget all the sentimentality at the climax and end with an actual statement of rebellion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine is that, and you touched on this earlier, this whole thing about the studio having a cocaine mentality and the filmmakers having a pot mentality. And when you watch that mid-credit scene, which you didn't see, but it's just so understated and it's talking about relevant bands from that era. And it taps into this one-upmanship that people, music fans, that Gen X thing had. It's like, who knows what? It's like arguments about who's better, Pixies or the Primus.
Yeah, yeah.
All of that. It just feels authentic. It feels real. It feels like if Moyle had been allowed to make the movie he wanted, which was loads of moments like that. He talks about how he, in his original director's cut, there was a 5-minute discussion of the Shags. There was Eddie, who maintained within the store a mini vinyl section. And he did this whole talk about why a razor sharp breakdown of the various Clapton recordings. And I just think, get rid of all this forced sentimentality, this fucking scattershot, sketchy plot, and just have, like, kids talking about the music of the era,
yeah.
Pull it back, pair it back, and do it low-key. And I think, you know, it would never have been Clerks, but it would have been a film that actually spoke to the generation that it was desperately trying to reach, as opposed to what we have now. So, you know, I'm going to say it, release the Moyle cut.
I've got two. Well, the first one's super quick. We've got two corporate dicks. Mitch is a corporate dick. A Music Town sort of by inference is a corporate dick.
Yep.
Collapse those. Just need one corporate dick.
But it should be Music Town, right? I think
Mitch. Maybe Joe already owns the store, but he's got a big loan. Boring, whatever. But Mitch is Music Town. I want your store, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You need to see the big villain. You need them to walk in. And it's not enough just having the aprons, the uniforms, what have you. You need a representative there going, this is how it's going to work
I'm
when we take over.
I'm taking your record store from you. So that, but the big one is, and you've mentioned this, I don't think AJ and Corey should get together because she's going to Harvard to have a great time. This relationship that's been 5 years in the making, it's not going to happen. It's 5 years, it's not going to happen. So just be friends. And the message is they're just really good support for each other because what she gets at the end of the film, again, I know a woman wrote it, but he gets from the film, from this funeral thing, the realisation of his true path, which is like, I need to be an artist. And I've applied to art school in the 10 minutes since his funeral and I've got into art school in Boston. Brilliant. What she gets, bearing in mind her dad is a nightmare, she's studying like hell all the time. What Corey gets is a boyfriend. No, we're not having that. So she doesn't get a boyfriend. She gets reaffirmation. She's got a best friend. She's got a buddy. And she can go to Harvard with some support in her life, which is her buddy AJ will be just down the road and they'll have a nice time together. That's it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. And we're done.
Okay.
Quiz.
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 You want a quiz?
Yeah, feel the energy. Leave the room.
I know.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be that person. I just, it just makes me nervous. I've run cold again. Yeah. All the colour is drained from me and it will return to me.
You're as lilac as your blouse.
I've said we can stop doing the quiz.
I know.
Would you like to stop?
I don't know. I think maybe I've got this self-loathing streak that makes me want to suffer at the end of every show.
But you win. You always win. You more or less.
Not always.
This is a music quiz I've written.
I remember an occasion where you won.
How's our music knowledge?
Not great, actually.
What about music of the era of these films?
No, I just, most of my music knowledge came from mixtapes my friends made me. I was always a bit of a fake music fan.
No.
Yeah. Like, I've laughed at the Gin Blossoms for the whole thing. Don't know the Gin Blossoms. That's who I am. I'm a fake person. I'm a cardboard human.
Hey, Jealousy.
What?
That's one of those songs. All right, we're going to do it anyway.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to speak the first line of a song that was number one when these films came out.
Okay.
So, Empire Records.
Oh, wait, and we have to tell you the song.
The song and the artist. Shout out. Okay. 1 point for each.
Oh, my God.
So if you say the song and you say the artist, you both get a point.
Oh, ooh, that's nice.
You might get a shot on Nevermind the Buzzcocks.
Is that still on?
It's back on Sky.
Is it great? Yeah. All right, let's see what happens.
Do well.
So Empire Records came out in America on September the 22nd, 1995.
Okay.
Here we go. What is this the first line from?
I hate this.
I know, I'm so tense.
As I walk through the valley...
Coolio, Gangster's Paradise.
Hello.
I have got a feeling this is going to be a disaster for
no.
me.
That was excellent. Thank so you. That was the US number one that week. In the UK, it was a different song. And the first line was... Another day has gone.
Wake up, Boo, the Boo Radleys.
I'm still all alone.
Oh. Olive, it, Alone.
Boyzone.
Another day has gone.
Gone. Michael Jackson.
Yep.
Earth Song?
No.
No.
Oh. I'm still all alone.
When you went to hold me. You are not alone.
All right. This is going to sort the men from the boys now, or the ladies from the men,
yep,
or the girls. It came out in the UK almost a year later, June the 28th, 1996. So this is what was number one in the US. This is going to be tricky, and I've got to try and keep a straight face. This is the opening line of the song that was number one in the US summer 1996.
Give up.
Bone, 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 bone. Now tell me what you're going to do.
Oh,
I have no idea.
Oh.
Would you like me to do it again? Bone, bone. Bone.
It's
bone,
not Boys to Men,
bone,
is it?
Bone. No, the clue's actually in that one. You might not know it. It wasn't a hit here, and it was number one for about 3 months in America.
No way.
Yeah, the whole summer, this rap tune was number one in the States, and they were never a thing here.
No.
It is The Crossroads by Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Oh.
Okay.
The clue was in the bone.
Yeah, no.
In
no.
the UK, it's a little bit easier, this one.
Right.
You're just going to have to be fast
I
here.
Think I already know it. Can I just go for it?
Yes.
All right.
Was it Country House, Blur?
No.
Oh!
She's out. She's out.
Yay! Give it to me.
Yeah, because you're going to kick yourself. Alex, strumming my pain with his fingers.
Oh, it's the Fugees.
The Fugees, Killing Me Softly.
Yes, I got one. 2 points.
Oh, thank God.
Well played. All right, we'll just do two more. Because the last two I was going to do, I don't think you'll know. But this one, you will. Okay, High Fidelity came out in America on March the 31st, 2000. What was this the first line from? I'm starting with the second line because the first line was the title of the song.
Okay.
Okay.
If no one is around you, say, baby, I love you, if you ain't running game.
Oh, fuck. It's, it's Whitney Houston.
No.
It is. It bloody is.
No.
No, it's not, wait. I can sing you that. Oh, Say My Name, TLC.
It's Say My Name, it's not TLC.
Destiny's Child.
Destiny's
correct,
Child.
Alex. Well played, Alex. In the UK that week, this is the first line of a song. Want some whiskey in your water? Sugar in your tea.
Oh, I don't know that.
Oh, it's Mama Told Me to Come by Tom Jones, yes! And the Stereophonics.
Yes! He's on the comeback trail. Yeah, you're not going to get this one. Well, even though I had the single, I just don't think it's worth it. So I'll do the last one now, which is the UK one. The other one was going to be... Well, I'll do the other one. Somewhere They're Speaking, It's Already Coming In. I don't think you'll know it, an American song. No. I've got the CD single if you want to borrow it.
No, I don't know
it's
it.
It's Everything You Want by Vertical Horizon. Forget it. Final one. This was the UK number one, July 21st, 2000. The daylight's fading slowly, but time with you is standing still. I'm waiting for you only.
Lighthouse Family.
The slightest touch and I feel weak. It's something equally bland.
Oh, what were they called? Savage Garden.
No. Oh, you're in the right ballpark.
Ronan Keating.
They Right Country.
Westlife.
Wrong band.
Boyzone.
Wrong band.
The Cause.
Bewitched.
Yes, correct. Can anyone get the song?
Just give it to me again.
What was that?
The daylight's fading slowly, but time with you is standing still. I'm waiting for you only. The slightest touch and I feel weak.
No,
I don't know. What was their mate big
Kill
song?
Me something? No, that's the other one. They had like two massive ones, didn't they? Oh, hold me. Oh, leave me breathless.
Correct.
Bloody hell. Fuck me.
It's a tie.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
And I haven't done a tiebreaker. So it's a tie. Everyone wins.
Wow.
Bone, 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 bone,
bone, bone, bone. Great stuff. What a wonderful quiz. I loved that because I thought that was going to be a lot worse for me. Right, there we go. That's the end of the show. And let's look ahead to next week's Fanuary and another listener-suggested clash. I have the clue for you. And the clue is this. A bit weak. Written quite late. You'd better use one on the other, otherwise disaster!
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
You better use one on the other, otherwise disaster!
That's fun.
Tough.
Great.
It's good.
All right, there'll be another clue heading your way on our Twitter, at ClashPod. Also, if you would like to give us a review, please do so on Apple Podcasts. We would hugely appreciate it. And do subscribe to us if you haven't done already on whichever podcast platform you use. We are back on Thursday talking High Fidelity. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.